pick up your wife's then?
After. Okay.
She lands at 9:30.
Mitzvah Shir. Tonight we're going to do what I would call the Hanukkah origin story, for lack of a better term. There, we have sort of a notion about what the Chag is, what we celebrate, and some of the history is lost upon us, and it's important to sort of rethink some of those things. And we focus on a particular aspect of the Chag, and we don't focus on this other part of it, and I think it's significant, and we should really sort of review some of it. So we're going to look tonight, this year, we'll look at Sefer Maccabim, the Book of the Maccabees. Is that what you saw? Okay, cool. So I'm on the right kibbutz. And then next year we'll look at the story of Yehudit and the role that she plays. So by next year you'll have forgotten.
I just showed that. I was just thinking you'll correct the
kibbutz
next year.
Next year. So I've given the talk on Yehudit before, but
is this safer Yehudit?
Yeah. Yes, there is.
It's not part of Tanakh.
No, neither is Sefer Maccabim.
But people more and more are bringing it into Shiurim and stuff, which is interesting.
Yeah, the history is interesting. It's a legitimate historical source that people hold of. It does appear in the Targum HaShivim, in the Septuagint. So it has validity to it. The question is to... No. In terms of the timing of the Sefer Maccabim is sort of an open question, is if it's immediately right after it happened or it's a little bit later. The original version we don't have. The original version is believed to have been written in Hebrew. We don't have that. We have the Greek, which was then translated back into Hebrew, which is the one that we're using tonight a little bit of. And I always found it interesting as a piece. So tonight's piece comes from a sefer called Al HaMoedim, by Rav Meir Tzvi Grossman, who is, I think he's a rabbi in Tel Aviv, where mm-hmm. he taught for many years in Bar Ilan, or still does. He's a fantastic Magid Shir, and his Sfarim are amazing. So this comes from there directly. And over the years, I've really learned a ton from him about the study of Tanakh and the study of the Chagim. His other great work that I really love is called Al HaChet V'Al HaTshuva, where he goes deep into the idea of why people do Chataim. Because without understanding why we do those things, it's really hard to do tshuva on the other side of that. So he spends half the book on sinning, and the other half on repenting. It's a fantastic sefer, very heavy, very deep. But anyway, okay. So tonight I want to do this part in what I call the Hanukkah origin story. I had like three different names for it, but I think I'm settling on that one. So let's look first at the Gemara, and then ultimately we'll get into the Sefer Maccabim on the bottom of page one, and look at some of it together. Okay, so the Gemara begins in Masechet Shabbat, source number one, as to the holiday of Hanukkah. So the Gemara there is discussing candles, and so in the course of discussing candles, it brings up Hanukkah. So look with me at source number one, line number two. The Gemara asks the question, "My Hanukkah, what is Hanukkah?" Rashi explains in source number two, Al Eza Nes Kiva Uha, on what miracle specifically is the holiday of Hanukkah established. As the Gemara explains, Ditana Rabbanan, line two, Bechavhe Bikislev, Yome de Hanukkah, Timnaya Inun. So, quoting a source from something called Masechet Ta'anit, which deals with all the days that the Jewish people don't fast, which is not a sefer that we necessarily have, but we know a lot of those things because they're quoted in the Gemara. So, on the 25th day of Kislev, is Hanukkah, which is 8 days long. Dilola mispeid b'hon, we don't have eulogies. Dilola yitanut b'hon, we don't fast on it. Line three. So what's it based on? Kishenichnes tu yevanim lehechal timu kol hashemanim shvehechal. So this is the part that we know. Ukishegavra malchut beit chashmonaim benitzchum. Line four. Badku velo matzu elapach echad shel shemen shemunach bechotamo shel kohen gadol. Right, so this is the story of the Pach HaShemen. So it lit for 8 days. Yes? So maybe the person you heard hear from also used the Sefer and didn't quote it by name. Or maybe they did. Anyway, okay, the Shana Acheret, Kiva'um v'asa'um yamim tovim b'halil v'hoda'ah. So it's interesting to sort of, and I highlighted those words, what exactly does that mean? Thank you, sir.
See anybody? That's for coffee, you. Tequila.
Ooh. Wow.
She was getting better. Every minute. Sheer.
Adult sheer. Okay. I should put a disclaimer on the emails now.
I could have put that into the 18
WhatsApp and over.
I put it in full. I
18 and over. Okay. Okay. So it's interesting to note here that, so what happened? So they had this miracle, and then L'shana Acheret, what do those words mean? L'shana Acheret. So typically...
The following year. Would have
typically
been.
The explanation is the following year, right? That it means the next year.
But then
year.
It would have been
yeah, L'shana right. Yeah, right. Exactly right. The typical way to say that would be not the way it's said in this Gemara. It says L'shana Acheret, sometime later, Kiva'um, they established those days. So they established those days as a day to remember the holiday of the lighting of the candles, and they also made them days of Hallel and Hoda'ah, seemingly on the lighting, the miracle of the lighting of the candles, right? There is no mention whatsoever beyond the five words of the what happened with the Yevanim and the Cheshmonaim. It's just mentioned briefly, but there's no discussion of it, and the establishment of the holiday does not appear to be connected to that part of it at all, but rather to simply the lighting of the candles, and that's what the Hallel is as well. I only brought you source number one, two, and source number three, I only brought the Shi'ul Torah of Rabbi Chai Gaon, simply because he changes the question from my Chanukah to my Ner Chanukah. What is the Ner Chanukah? It's very interesting. It happens to be in the Shi'ul Torah itself. He does a whole long piece about the story of Yehudit, which is really, really interesting, which, as I said, we'll get to next year.
Alan Neeson doesn't mention.
Yeah, we'll get to Alan Neeson. Right, I'll show you some Alan Neeson. Interesting thing about the structure of Alan Neeson based on what we're about to discuss. Even the Rambam in source number four, when the Rambam discusses it, he really also focuses on a very specific aspect of it. So we'll read it. I'll read quickly. בבית שני, כשמלכי יוון גזרו גזירות על ישראל וביטלו דתם, right? So when Yavan was in charge, it's safe to sit next to me, I promise. Line 16, ולא הניחו אותם לעסוק בתור מצוות, so it tells us what the Yavanim did. פשטו ידם בממונם בבנותיהם ונכנסו להיכל, they came into the heichal ופרצו בו פרצות ותימו הטהרות. So they made it tameh, impure. V'tzar lehem liyisom ma'ob mipneihem. The Jews had great suffering. V'lachatzum lachatz gadol. And they beat them up, right? Ad sherichem aleihem elokei avoteinu, until God had rachamim on them. V'oshiyam yadam v'yitzilam v'gavru b'nei chashmonim hakohanim hagedolim v'haragum. V'oshiyu yisrael miyadam. They rescued the Jewish people from them. V'amidu melech min hakohanim. They established a kingdom from amongst the priests, from the kohanim themselves. So then they had 200 years of respite until the Chorban HaSheni. Okay, keep going. It was the 25th of Kislev. Now he gets into this whole thing about the Pach HaShemen. They found the Pach HaShemen Echad, and at the end of line 23... So they took them some time until they were able to get new, clean, fresh oil, and it lasted 8 days. So he says in line 25, therefore, ומדליקים בהם נרות בערב על פתחי הבתים בכל לילה ולילה משמונת הלילות, להרות ולגלות הנס. To show off and to reveal the miracle. What miracle? It seems to be the miracle of the candles. Again, candles, candles, candles. All we're really focused on is the candle, which is fine, because that's an important piece of the story. But that is really what the miracle, as established in the Rambam, and before the Rambam in the Gemara, is really based on that. And it really begs the question, is that it? There was a lot of other miracle that we know about, that we talk about in the davening, right? Rabbi Mad Matim, right? All that other stuff that seems to be rather miraculous. We've celebrated that many times in history, and not too distant past here, where it was less people beating and destroying more people. So that's a miraculous thing that we are aware of, and yet it seems to get no play whatsoever in the sources that are what we would call the leading halachic sources at all, except
so
for
the
one.
The whole candle thing wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for those miracles, because we wouldn't have had
accidents. Yeah, exactly right. Right. So the candle story is
only sort of a result, a consequence correct. Of it's the a, fact
yeah,
that
right. If you don't win the war and get the Mikdash back, there's no candle story. Right. That story doesn't happen. Right. And so we'll sort of see that as well. So what I want to share with you tonight is a little bit of the roots of Hanukkah, by reading some of Sefer HaMakabim together. And I think you'll see some interesting things. I'll say it that way. Okay, so we're on the bottom of page number one from Sefer HaMakabim. Again, this is in and around, or just after the time frame of when it happens. If you ever have a chance to read it through, it's really interesting. The way it describes Yehuda Maccabee is really heroic, and he is just an incredible person to have, to just read about. It's sort of the way he thinks about what he's trying to accomplish and what he invokes when he goes to war. The idea of fasting before going to war, because it should be that we're servants of God, and that it's for God, and we have to pray. He invokes prayer before they go out to war. He really focuses on what they're trying to do, and really keeps them focused on the mission and the goals, which are very religious in nature and very, I would call, Jewish in nature in terms of what they're trying to accomplish. It's an incredibly... What's that?
Who wrote it?
It's not clear who wrote it. It's an anonymous work again. And then the timing of it is interesting, but it does have corroboration in history from other sources, which gives it real oomph as a source. Oomph is not a technical word. It's sort of like, it's my word. Yeah. Did I use it? Okay. Okay, so let's look together. I bring you just a small section from the first book of Chashmonaim. The structure of Sefer Chashmonaim, there are many, many books in it. I only bring you a piece from Sefer Aleph and Sefer Bet. There's a few, but the only Aleph and Bet really deal with the story of the Maccabim themselves. They after that deal with other things that happened to Jews in and around that time. I think Book 3 deals with Jews in Egypt at that time, and some sort of salvation that they went through at the time. Yeah, there's a lot that happened. Yeah, it was just asked. It's anonymous. We don't know. It's an unknown. Okay, let's keep going. Here we go. Bottom of the page, line 29. Vayidaber Yehuda ve'achav el ha'am limor. So Yehuda speaking to the nation. Heino ha'yev nigaf lifaneinu v'ata alon na'ale v'tziharnu et mikdash Hashem. You'll see very, very much. Hi. Very much you'll see the invoking of sort of Torah language. V'ata alon na'ale v'tziharnu et mikdash Hashem. Right at the bottom of the page, number one. So they go up to Har Tzion. Vayhi, going up to page number two. Birotam et hamikdash ki shamem, v'et hamizbeach ki cholel, v'adlatot srufot ba'esh, v'alishkot neherasot. So they see the destruction on Har Habayit. V'esav hatzed et tameach b'chol gvulo misaviv, and the grass is grown, so it's a wasteland, right? V'yikru et bigdehem, they tear their clothing. V'yizraku afar al rosham v'yitablu ma'od, and they mourn. Verse 40, line 3. V'yiru b'chatzotzot tru'ad, they blow shofar. V'yiplu apneihem, v'tal shavatam ha'shamayma. It's very, what you would call biblical, right? In the manner in which they're mourning this destruction, sounds very much like Korban HaRbayin HaRishon, in theory, if anybody would have been there. V'yitzaveh Yehuda et gedud echad mi'anashav, v'atzorol mitzuda ad taharam et ha'mikdash. So he commands them to get to work. So take all the rocks that have become tamei, however they know that is, and get rid of them. They see the mizbeach that it also was defiled. So they went to decide what should they do. Verse Mendal, line 7. Get rid of it. Take it down. And they destroy it. They put the stones to the side somewhere on Harabayit. Until some Navi will come along and decide what's the psak halacha with those stones. But until that time, nothing. Like we know from the Torah, that you shouldn't have any metal touching the stones for the Mizbeach. Like the first one. They redoing everything. They clean it. They make everything all beautiful. They make new kelim. They put the menorah back. End of line 13. And they lit the candles in the mikdash. They knew at lechem hapanim al shulchan that they put the breads right bet the parochet al aron v'tachal kol avadah kasher batchila, and they completed all the work. Now, vayhi bayom line 16 verse 51 nun aleph vayhi bayom hachamishi ve'esrim lachodesh atchi hu kislev. So that is what day kaf hey kislev bishnat shmona v'arba'im u'meya, in the year 148. Exactly what year that is in terms of the counting was unclear to me, but okay. Vayeshkimu baboker, so they go up on that day. Vayalu olot al mizbeach hachadash kamishpat, and they bring korbanot. Vayechanchu et mizbeach beetzem hayom asher timu otam agoyim, right? And they go and they're mechaneich, right? They dedicate the mizbeach. Vayalu laHashem b'shirim b'kinarot u'b'chalilim b'mitzaltzelim. Vayipnu apneim b'shtachu laHashem al asher natan lahem oz v'tshuah. So what are they celebrating, right? What's going on here? This is the rededication of the mikdash, and says end of line 19. Vayachogu et chanukat hamizbeach shmonat yamim. They celebrate for 8 days. Okay, good. Skip to line 22. Why? What's going on here? It's a big celebration. Ki galal Hashem et chirpat hagoyim eileim. For what purpose? Because they have removed. They have removed this just blemish, the disgrace that's on them, this mark on them. They removed it from them, and so they're celebrating. To celebrate the dedication of the mizbeach, so Yehuda commands that they celebrate an 8-day holiday on the dedication or the rededication of the mikdash and the mizbeach. And so the chag is effectively called chag chanukat hamizbeach, right? Or chanukat hamikdash. It's not chag chanukah that we celebrate, and it has zero to do with some miraculous event with candles, right? They did light candles, it says that, because they lit the menorah like they would normally do. But it has nothing to do...
That explains the meaning that we have on
the front. That we read Bahalotcha. The Nasa with the Nasiya. Yeah, okay. On some level, yeah, I think so. Right, yeah, yeah. And we say Mizmor Shir, right? The Mizmor, the additional Mizmor Leon, right, is Chanukat HaBayit, right? Okay, yeah, exactly right. So it's interesting. So it's nothing to do with the candle business whatsoever, which for me I always thought was really interesting. What's not clear is why it's 8 days.
Yeah.
That's not clear in this text, but he establishes some sort of an 8-day thing. Exactly why it's not clear from here. We'll get to that in just a minute. How exactly they picked that day seems to be deliberate. In other words, when we learn the story that it's that happens to be the day that's Chaf Hei Kislev, that's the day that they're in the Mikdash and they get the candles, and that's when they start the candle business, and that's why we celebrate the day. Here, it seems to be. And so it was on the 25th day of the ninth month of Kislev, on a certain day, that they went up and they did this, right? So where does that come from, and why is that the case? So look at me in the source number 6. Source number 6 will tell you as to what the significance of the day was. And this is also from Sefer Makkabim, the Sefer Hashmonaim, however you want to call it, in chapter 1 of book 1. So page 2, line 26. Vahi b'shnat Me'av Arbeim Chamesha. This is the 145th year. B'chamisha Asar Yom L'Chodesh Kislev, on the 15th day. This is 3 years earlier. I'm going backwards. Yeah, 3 years earlier in the month of Kislev. Yakimu Shikutz Mishumam Al Mizbach Hashem Vayivnu Bamot B'chol Arei Yehuda Misaviv. So they come on the 15th day of Kislev and they defile the mizbeach and they build all kinds of altars all over Yehuda. They tear up Sifrei Torah. They burn them. Line 29. So they kill everybody who tries to keep Torah and mitzvos. Now line 31, this is the key line. On the 25th day of the month, that's the month of Kislev, Zivchu et zivchehem ala bama shirikimu nochach mizbach Hashem. They did a korban, they brought a korban on the mizbeach that they established, which was next to the mizbeach of Hashem. So what is the significance of the 25th day of Kislev? It's not an accident. Meaning, Yehuda chooses the 25th day of Kislev 3 years, the day that they, after they win the war, right? They could have done any day. He picks Dafka, the day historically, which they know is the day that the Yevanim defiled the Mizbeach for the first time with their own korban. That is the day he sets for the establishment of the holiday of Chanukah to Mizbeach some 3 years later, right? So it's not an accidental day. It's a significant day in history. And additionally, there's a Midrashic text that talks about the actual Mishkan. There's an idea that the Mishkan also originally is actually completed in Kislev, but they wait till Nisan to actually establish it. And I believe the Midrash says there that it's also Kafei Kislev, that the Mishkan is originally. So the day itself is not an accidental day, and it's not established as a day purely because of the Hanukkah miracle. It's established initially as a day of embarrassment for the Jewish people that he's now fixing and cleaning up and applying a holiness to that day. Again, absent any idea specifically about the candles and the menorah, right? So here, in and of itself, that would be worthy of a celebration. That's exactly what he did. He celebrated that day and he made a holiday. The eight-day thing I have not yet explained, but perhaps in source number 7, we'll get to some sort of an idea about where the eight-day holiday comes from. So this is from Sefer Melachim. This is after the building of the Beit HaMikdash itself. Shlomo HaMelech has dedicated the first Beit HaMikdash, going up to page number 3. And we know that that year that Shlomo HaMelech did something interesting when they celebrated the establishment of the Beit HaMikdash that year. So look with me at the top of the page. This is from Melachim Aleph. Bayom Ahu, Kidesh HaMelech Etoch HaChatzir Shelifnei Beit Hashem. He brought all the korbanot. So he makes a holiday. Massive crowd of people have gathered there in Yerushalayim, understandably, to celebrate the dedication and the building of and the completion of the Beit HaMikdash. Shivat Yamim v'Shivat Yamim Arba Asar Yom. He makes a holiday for 14 days, 7 on 7. And then, Bayom Hashmini Shalach Et Ha'am. So Rav Grossman in his article says, perhaps, that's the idea of some sort of like an 8-day thing, that it's Yisruchag slash, like, yeah, or like a Shmini Atzeret kind of a thing, whatever it is, that that Yehuda was trying to invoke the memory of what Shlomo did initially, and celebrating some sort of an 8-day holiday. That's one. Yeah, that too. Right, that would work also. He doesn't say that, right? But it could simply just say that, just like in the Torah, that you have a 7-8-day holiday, 7-day, and then the 8th day is the day that the actual mikdash starts, which was Rosh Chodesh Nisan in the Torah. But yeah, you could do that also. He doesn't, but you could certainly say that. However, Sefer Makavim provides perhaps a different idea about the 8-day holiday, and this is source number 8. And so far again, just to sort of keep us focused on where we are, we have talked about what happened to establish the holiday of Hanukkah. We have certainly made some sort of reference in the halachic works with the candle miracle, and the actual Sefer Makabim, the Book of Maccabees, really doesn't focus on that whatsoever. It doesn't even mention it, but it rather only focuses on the wars and, more importantly, the rededication of the Mikdash at that time. So Sefer Makabim, in Book 2, which is now in Source 8, gives you perhaps another idea about where the 8-day holiday comes from in terms of the number of days. And typically speaking, what we always have is the question is, why is Hanukkah 8 days? And there's always like a thousand reasons why the holiday of Hanukkah is 8 days long. Right? It could be 7 days, but it's 8 days. So here he gives you an entirely different thing. So start with me in the verse number 9, okay, the highlighted section. It's a bolded section. So he says as follows. So he is again going through here what just happened, and that they're praying to Hashem, and Hashem should watch over them, and Hashem should take care of them. And he says as follows, they celebrate an 8-day holiday, Kimei Chag HaSukkot, like Sukkot. Now, we know Sukkot is 7 days, but you add Shmini Atzeret, you get 8 days. Right? V'yizkiru atayamim mikedem b'chagagam b'chag HaSukkot b'harimu b'me'arot v'yit'u b'yishimon kibehemot sadeh. Why is it that? Because when Sukkot came out during that time, they were not able to go up to the Mikdash, and they celebrated Sukkot, as it says, in the hills and in the caves. So what did they do? On this year, v'yichlu arvei nachal, v'kapot timarim, v'yashiru shir shevach v'hodayah l'Hashem. So they took two of the four minim, two of the four species, in their hands, and they sang songs to Hashem, Hashem natan lahem ozit shua l'taheret beit mikdasho. And then they used that as sort of some sort of a celebratory mode to be able to sing praises to Hashem. But if you recall, B'chol HaRei Yehuda, and then they sent out messages to all over the place, L'chog et ha'chag hazeh midei shana b'shana, that they should celebrate it year over year, a celebration that is commemorative of what holiday? Sukkot. Right? When? In Kislev.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And where does this come from?
This is the Book of Maccabees.
That's not part of the canon.
It's not in Tanakh. No, I mentioned at the outset that it counts as part of the Targum HaShivim. The Septuagint is actually counted it, had it in there. It's apocryphal. It's the post-Tanakhic era, but it has heft to it as a historical work. Oomph is the word I used before. Heft is the word I use now. Those are, you're the English teacher. Those are it's synonymous, right? They can be synonyms of some sort. You'll take either one. Thank you very much.
You're really beginning to sweat now.
She's so careful with my language. But here you get this Chag HaSukkot, this Chag HaSukkot idea, which is a unique sort of idea about Chanukah. That if you want to put it in sort of a timing space, they were carrying greens in their hands in sometime in December. Which is sort of inconvenient for the Jewish people, right? Before there was any sort of idea about greenery around other holidays at that time of the year, they're carrying this, at least that year. It doesn't say anywhere that they, year after year, that they carried a part of the Dalet Minim with them, probably because they were able to keep Sukkot afterwards, so they didn't need it, but they were keeping, they did continue with this holiday afterward.
Is that why we throw your rovos on top of the arm?
I don't think so. I don't think it has to do with this.
So they beautified it, right? Which would be Hadas Meravos.
No, they did carry them. They carried them. Bayikhu, they carried them. Yeah, they carried them. No, I don't know.
Because Sukkot is just like a very Mikdash type from all
correct.
The other regulations.
No question
so
about it.
This was the one that you were celebrating.
No question. I think that's right. I was trying to think that through also. Right, they missed, right. You're right. If it's based on the idea that they were fighting wars and they couldn't celebrate it in the Mikdash, then they probably didn't do Korban Pesach that year either in the Mikdash. But you're right. There's a very heavily Mikdash-centered nature to Sukkot with Nisu Chamayim and the Simbat Beit HaShoev is all based in the Mikdash. It's the Zman Simchateinu. It's a very happy time. So not to be able to do any of that, one could imagine why one would be upset missing it, and the opportunity
and
it seems to do it.
Kind of exactly, taking things from Sukkot to celebrate.
Right. I could also see it being sort of dangerous, the idea that you're going to use some of the simanim of Sukkot later on in the calendar can be viewed as sort of a dangerous sort of precedent. You don't want to start doing that where you're using holiday symbols and other holidays or making up holidays along the way. I can see why that could be.
My first reaction was not that. My first reaction was Anani HaKavod.
What about Anani HaKavod?
They're protective.
Yeah.
Right? They eliminated threats even before the Bnei Israel encountered them. And here was a great military victory over our enemies.
Oh, okay.
Again, demonstrating the protection of Hashem.
That's much loftier than what they were just simply that they didn't keep. They couldn't keep a mitzvah, right?
Right.
Which is also good.
I'm a little confused.
Okay, go ahead.
But I missed out on the beginning. You're saying here that for 8 days they celebrated in order to remember Sukkot?
Yes. Beyond what I mentioned at the outset.
Have you ever done anything like that before?
We haven't. We also haven't had an experience where we couldn't do a holiday while we were in the land. in the manner that we wanted to. So historically, it's a unique moment. That's part of it. Meaning, in prior exile moments, right, when the first temple was destroyed, so this wasn't a possibility, right? The Jews were kicked out. Here, this is the time the Mikdash stands. The Jews are under the rulership of an outside power and continually encroaching on their ability to practice, right? And then once they go to war, all bets are off at that point. They're not allowed into Jerusalem. The Jerusalem is over for them. And so the Mikdash is not a thing. It's a thing in the distance. They can't go there. Mm-hmm. And so suddenly you can't use the Mikdash. Suddenly you know. So if you're the religious group of people that the family, the Hashmoni family is, so that's like, and they're Kohanim, so that's an offense to them. So it's meaningful to them, right? So it's a unique moment in that sense. Now, it connects obviously to sort of the other thing we mentioned before, that to randomly just do a holiday on the 25th day of Kislev doesn't make any sense, but because we have the other piece of it where they're celebrating a holiday on the rededication of the Mikdash, so then they're able to bring those things together and add some an additional religious element to it by remembering Sukkot that they missed. Which I think is interesting. I think it's an interesting sort of thing. It goes so far as to say...
The only thing we have left of that is the 8 days.
Yeah.
That's it. We don't do anything else reminiscent of... Sukkot.
No, nothing. And like I said, I didn't see anywhere else in Sefer Malkim that they do it again.
It's in the Sefer Malkim for the Hakafot.
Nice. Well done. Yes. in source number 9, in source number 9, he simply mentions the idea that it wasn't just a localized holiday, but in fact, they sent out letters to the larger Jewish community, as I mentioned, as I highlighted for you in verse Yud Bet there, that they sent letters to the Jews of Mitzrayim, to the Jews of Egypt, and they asked them to celebrate too. Right? It's not just that we won here, but in a similar fashion, on some level, to what happened with Purim, where the Esther and Mordechai sending out igrot, sending out letters to all over the place that everyone should celebrate. Now there, in that case, everybody was in danger. Here, perhaps the Jews of Egypt were not necessarily in danger. But the victory was a significant military victory, and it should be meaningful to Jews everywhere that the Mikdash is now back in play and usable. So therefore, they beseech the Jews of Egypt to celebrate the holiday. And as I said, to look at verse 20, which is highlighted in line 26, Hodot v'alel Hashem ki ichrita to Rishayim in ha'aretz ve'inam, that they got rid of them, which isn't exactly true at that point, that they're not really out, but okay. V'ata ki yeshet nafshenu lachog et chag yom chanukat ha'mizbeach, again, what are they calling it? This is line 28. Yom chanukat ha'mizbeach ve'esim v'chamesh lachodesh kislev, the 25th day of Kislev, lo chidalim yodiyat chem lachogi oto imanu, we want you to celebrate with us, v'chagotem oto kimei chag ha'sukot, you should celebrate it like Chag HaSukkot, just like Sukkot, which is the continuation of the prior idea in the prior source. So you have this idea of this sort of spreading holiday that is wholly focused on the rededication of the Mikdash, right? Reestablishment of the service in the Mikdash. The military victory is simply the means by which that takes place, but celebrate the idea that the Mikdash stands and we can go there and we can have our holidays again and do it like you would do Sukkot. So it's very interesting from my standpoint. I think that's a very interesting approach that Hanukkah is very much about Chanukah HaMizbeach and not necessarily about the candle thing. The question we'll have to ask, which we'll deal with in just a moment, is, well, what about the candle? Like, I eliminated it, basically, right? So I can't do that. How does that work? Where does it fit?
Well, isn't that part of rededicating?
So that's where we're going to get to. A little bit that, yes, we'll get to there, and we'll add an additional layer to that in just a moment. But before that, just look at, with me at source number 10, which goes up onto page number 4, which is the Al Hanisim Tefillah. When you look at Al Hanisim as a Tefillah, so the Tefillah itself, and I'm sure you know this, I'm saying it every year, the Tefillah itself focuses very heavily on the military victory. Yeah, the Milchama, right? I wrote the Sfaradi version, I apologize for the Ashkenazim in the room. Ulavirami chukei ritzonecha, or ritzonach, depending on how you read it. Ve'ata berachamecha rabim adalam be'etzaratam. So you stood for them in their moment of need. Raftat rivam dantat dinam nakamta et nikmatam. Right? You fought for them. You avenged them. Line 4, masarti gibarim yad chalashim. You gave over the mighty into the hands of the weak. Rabim ad matim, the many into the hands of the few. V'chule. And the focus there is entirely on the military victory. Only afterward, right, in line 6, they came to the mikdash, right, they cleaned it, they purified it, and then they lit candles in the courtyard. Now, you could say that that is the reference to the candle miracle, or you could say it's not, based on reading Sefer Maccabim, which said that they simply lit the menorah, which would be normal activity, so you could say that here. The only problem with it is really is that it's the only thing that they sort of mention in the text, so it clearly has some sort of a hint, at least, if nothing else, some sort of a reference to the candle idea. So then they established the 8-day holiday to praise Hashem. The praising of Hashem now in the tefillah is not so much about the candles, so much as it is about the military victory, right? And so when we talk about Al Hanisim, Ve'al HaPorkam, Ve'al HaGruah, Ve'al HaChuot, yes, the candles are mentioned, but the focus in the tefillah is very much about the life-saving event, the military victory, and then the rededication of the Mikdash. So it plays itself out, whereas it mentions the candles, it plays itself out into the halacha, at least into the tefillah part, that we're praising Hashem and saying Hallel for the military victory and the rededication of the Mikdash. Which doesn't answer the question about where the candle business comes in. And though I bring you source number 10 from the Maharal. So number 11 from the Maharal. This was the only source I couldn't find online in some sort of like a cool database. So I had to cut and paste. I did that for Yigal to cut and paste and make that fit on the page. It's so much extra work, you know?
I just want to make sure the line numbers are perfectly coordinated with the lines on the page. And
it's
not,
very hard.
It's really work.
You have to sort of paginate, right? And you have you have to make the cuts, right? And make them enlarge them and then keep them centered or to the. It's very difficult. Just someone get me the Maharal on the disk somewhere and or online somewhere and I don't have to do this anymore. Okay. So we're going to read parallel to line 16. In the right column where it says Vav Yud Lamed Vyesh Lomar. Everyone have it? It's the second to last thin line. So the Maharal is going to deal with this specific issue that we're dealing with here, is that you have this incredible victory that for the Jewish people, which albeit doesn't last for a period of time, but doesn't last for all time. But what about this the candle business? So he says, Vyesh Lomar. They did it mostly for the establishment of the victory against the Greeks. But it would then look as if simply they just won the war. And as we know, sometimes when you win the war, you forget the godly piece to that victory. And that it was not their actual strength that did it. They fought, yes, but they had help. Lefikach, therefore, going on to the next line, Nasa hanes, aide nerot haminorah. So the miracle of the nes of the candles happens, right? Sheyedu, so they should know, shakol haya benes hamilchama gamkein. That was the, so too was the case also with the war, that it was miraculous in nature. Bedavka nes zen nasa. This is going to your point, specifically why this kind of miracle. Kiika risha tayivanim. The essential part of what the Yevanim were trying to attack was the religious, the religious spiritual part of the Jewish people, and the impurification of the Mikdash exemplifies that more than anything else. So the miracle has to happen there on purpose. So Kamosha Amru, as they said, line 20, Kishenichnesu Yevanim Lehechal, that they came and they impurified the Mikdash. Of that they removed all that they that what the Yevanim did to the Mizbeach, and that they removed Devin. Vashem Yitbarach, line 22. Ra'ah Rish Atam, Shetimu Heichal Shelo. God saw that they defiled his Mikdash. V'natan Koach B'yad Chashmonai Yevanav, and he gave power and strength to the family of Chashmonaim. Shehem Kohanim Ovdei Hashem Heichalo. They are Kohanim, right? It's not accidental that the people who win this battle, who lead it, are also Kohanim. Ve'elu nitzchum davka v'lo akarim, and it was them who won this war, not somebody else. It's not clear to anybody that they were warriors before this all began. They were Kohanim.
They were leaders. They did have a position.
Yes, but they're not military leaders, right? Until this point, Yehuda, as a person, is a guy who serves in the family as a member of a Kohanic tribe. He's not the hero that we know him to become. He and his brothers and his father are Kohanim. They react or they act or they step forward, yes. But until that point, they're not that, right?
They're actually not out of a job. They had nothing to do.
Unemployed.
Look what happens,
when you cause unemployment, right? That's right. leads to war. Levikach, they says line 24. Kasher nitzchum, when they won the war, tiaru asa mikdash. They came and they rededicated and purified the mikdash. Shemot shetiknu ba'al hanisim. When they didn't have oil, right, they had a miracle. So that they could then go and complete the proper rededication of the mikdash, because central to the mikdash, no one would question this, central to the mikdash is the lighting of the candles on the menorah. That is a central moment on a daily basis, and it's a central piece of the mikdash is the menorah.
What
does mechanech
habayit mean?
To dedicate.
To dedicate. Okay.
Yeah.
What's interesting to me is that the menorah and the mikdash. I mean, I could totally be wrong about this, but the menorah and the mikdash was only 7, right?
Yes.
Our menorah is 9 because of the
Chanukiah. Yeah, because of the holiday, right?
They're called different things. One's called a Chanukiah, one called menorah.
They do it right. On purpose. They don't.
So a Chanukiah is more. A menorah is what they had in the temple.
I understand. So, but if this is commemorating what happened, the eight candles are really good to remember the 8 days of how long it lasted.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it really also, it was the menorah.
Yeah, so, right.
It's not just 8 days how long it lasted. Also, they said the 8 days
right.
of Sukkot.
Right, I understand.
Right, it manifests itself ultimately in the creation of this thing called the Chanukiah, which is a later development, so that it has 8 stems as opposed to 7. Because typically, in reality, a person could light one, right? You could light one and you did the mitzvah. You just light one. So the idea of having 8 is just convenient. And then lining them up next to each other into one item is to sort of look like the menorah, but also give you the convenience of having 8 branches on it, right? I would refer you to an article. There's a book written by someone by the name of Daniel Sperber. It's called Minhagei Yisrael. And in there, I believe he has an article on the development of the Chanukiah as a thing. I shouldn't say that way. That doesn't sound nice. Development of the Chanukiah
as a
religious object of use on the holiday. But it is a development over time, and you can see through history. I forget which museum has like an exhibit.
Israel Museum.
Okay, has an exhibit on menorot over the course of centuries in different communities, and you would see how they would look differently. Okay, let's finish him out here. It says, Levikach, no problem, good question. So he says, Lekach, Nikra Chanukah, Shehayu Mechanchim et Beit HaMikdash, Achash Yitim'u B'nei Avon. Lefikach, HaNes HaZeh, Shenasa B'Shemen, right, this miracle which was done with oil, Hu HaNitzachon, Shehayu Menatzchim HaYevanim, Ki Ha... Right, HaNitzuach, the victory, Ha B'Shvil Shetim'u HaSehichal, God wanted the service back, and so he wanted there to have a remnant or some idea connecting the spiritual side of it, which could have been lost very easily, to the physical victory. And so he attaches that, and so the symbol becomes ultimately the menorah and the lighting and the Chanukiah and the lighting of the candles becomes a symbol of the holiday rather than the military victory or the spiritual rededication that took place as well. It's sort of interesting when you see people, talking about Hanukkah in modern times, leaving out the entire military aspect of it And the idea of Rabim Be'adma Atim, right, the many in the hands of the few, the pure, the impure in the hands of the pure, and just focusing on that there's a beautiful holiday of light, is sort of missing a very important layer to the origin of the holiday, which is what we discussed tonight. So the candle miracle, just to sort of round it out, is put on top of the rest of it to provide it with the spiritual side of it that one could easily forget otherwise. And so the holiday... So, yeah, I mean, there's enough... we have no historical record for it other than that the Gemara mentions it, Midrashim mention it. There was no one who was there who saw it that we have written down record of it.
It goes into so much detail
about military,
about the parting, and about
correct.
What went on.
It does not mention
that if this was
yes.
such a miracle,
it doesn't mention
the
it
thing,
at all.
There would be some.
Yeah, it makes no mention of it whatsoever, which is interesting.
And everything was impure. They couldn't just. Go into the Beit HaMikdash and be like,
no, it
oh,
even
let's
says specifically,
the,
yeah.
and they cleanse by Chatu et Asherim. It
yeah.
mentions all the cleansing they had to do,
right.
all the what they had to do, but nothing about
Asherim.
They're
saying that they had to like immediately do it as fast as they could to connect the spiritual.
Yeah, so it would be great if there was
no,
like
so
one line.
Knew that the point
right.
of it was the Beit HaMikdash, but they're worried about
it. Like, let's all get together instead of like.
It is really.
I don't know.
It would be great if there was one line in it that just simply said, and then Yehuda came along and said, we should light candles today, and then amazingly it lasted 8 days. That would be great. It's just not there.
Someone said they didn't actually light the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash, that they lit like spears. There's like some reference somewhere.
That it wasn't an actual menorah.
Yeah.
It's very possible.
That they like
very possible.
They